him, I also get complained for being very low voice. So hopefully, thanks to microphone, probably you guys see this one. So we just let me take back to what we already presented about lead and chromium immobilizations in soil. And part of the immobilization strategy is to let it adsorb strongly to the soil so that it doesn't move further. What I'm going to talk is how small particles or small fraction of soil that can help it mobilize again. And that's what we call colloids. And more specifically, what we are talking about here is we have this matrix and macropore, how this contaminant which is stuck inside matrix can be mobilized by colloid small particles. And that's more specifically matrix diffusion, whether it has a role for mobilizing the contaminant which is inside the matrix. Hopefully by the end of this talk, we'll have some clear understanding about it. So here is a brief description of how the soil is. We have two different kind of porosity. One is very big pores, which are we call macropore. And then on the right side, we have these are micropore, which is mostly in the matrix. So we have different in the pore size. We have contaminants moving at different rate. And what we think is contaminants stuck inside the micropore because it doesn't let it go easily. And here on the right side, we have rainfall, and we have macropore and matrix. What we are trying to see here is if matrix, every contaminant that is inside matrix can be mobilized in some points or in long term by colloids. So that if that's the case, then when, where, and how is going to do that? And this is our hypothesis. What we think is if we have a transient in ionic strength, that can mobilize those contaminants and colloids. And why ionic strength? Because at low ionic strength, those colloids or small particles can be mobilized very easily. At high ionic strength, it just gets adsorbed by at the soil surface itself. So that's, I'll be explaining a little more. But in order to do that, we need a soil which has both micropore and macropore, all kind of pore size. So that's why you can see that here, we get this soil core from Oak Ridge, Tennessee at Oak Ridge National Laboratory. And the soil is very fracturous, that provides this macropore. And we have also very high amount of clay in between this macropore here. So we take this soil core, intact soil core, and put it here. And we have rainfall simulator here, which just provide all the just DI water with different ionic strength. And we collect water at this different pore. The nicest or the most important thing is how we collect this water. This is, we have a 19-port grid, which is here, so that we collect at different points. And that's how it looks. So traditionally, what we do is we collect at one point where we get all the macropore and matrix mixed up. So we can't really say why it is happening. But we have this both macropore and matrix. For example, this big bold line is, let's say, macropore. Then we collect at that point, and then we can say this is because of macropore and matrix. So that's a big part of our hypothesis. And then what we did is we have this rainfall patterns. What we did is we have a 6-hour rainfall, a 5.5-hour rainfall. Then we have a pause for 18.5 hours to make sure that we have exchange, you know, that to amplify that exchange rate. And then we have also different ionic strength for each rainfall. So at first rainfall is at 10 millimole, then 5 millimole, 1, 0.1. So we are progressively decreasing the ionic strength. And then we also increase it to see how it affects if you have a different ionic strength. And we measure turbidity as a colloid and pH conductivity and also cesium strontium. By the way, this cesium and strontium were already there in the soil contaminated previously. So this is the first results. I'd like you to focus on this left side of the results now. And here we have 10. All 10 different rainfalls are there, 0 to 50, because each rainfall is 55 hours, and it's all 10 rainfall compacted into 50 hours. And the 18-hour pause is not shown up here, because we have this arrow mark, which indicates we have a pause. So this 50 hour is cumulative times when it rains. We take sample when it rains, not in the pause time. And from left side to right side, you can see that the ionic strength also decreases all the way here, and then increases. and y-axis is colloid amount mobilized at a different ionic strength. What we see here is on the left side or extreme right side, when we have ionic strength is very high, the colloids are not coming out because they stick to the soil much strongly. And then at the central part, which has low ionic strength, a lot more colloids comes out. Now that's what also can get the contaminants. And another contrasting feature is there are two ports here. We have actually five or six different ports, but I just saw the two ports, so it's more clear. Two extreme ports. Ports are sampling points where we get the sample for colloids and contaminant. So here is the R30 probe, which is a lot more colloids than the R150. And then when we plot the same thing, just the peak concentration at different ionic strength, what we see is that when we decrease the ionic strength from 10 to 1, it follows this route, how much colloid comes out. When it comes back, follow the different route, which is the hysteresis. If there is no hysteresis, then colloids should decrease with increase in ionic strength, and it should follow the same route. But we see a difference in colloid amount because of the exchange. That's what we thought. And in order to prove that, before we do that, we see also same patterns for the cesium, which is there in the matrix and the macropore. And this is the only colloidal fraction, how much associated with the colloid. So what it proved that if colloids are moving, it also mobilizing the contaminant, which is inside the matrix. And then what we did is to prove that the exchange is the mechanism why these contaminants are moving, we devised this hysteresis index, which is basically the difference in concentration at any ionic strength to the lowest one. For example, R130 ports, the hysteresis index is 730, which is basically difference divided by the lowest concentrations. What clear here is for one port it's very little, for another port R30 is very high. And what's the reason? That could be because of the exchange. Then what we did is we have the bromide breakthrough curve, which shows how much it disperses inside this each sampling points or port. You can see that R30, which is red color, this is x-axis time, and y-axis the bromide concentrations. We see that R30 probe, this bromide concentration is much more dispersed because it comes out at the end. And the reason it becomes that dispersed is because of the exchange with the matrix and macropore. And that is also proved by the by this flow interruption, 18-hour flow interruption, where the bromide concentration decreases because that 18 hours, the war exchange between matrix and macropore. And so we have this dispersion or the another indicator of how much it disperses based on the breakthrough time, which is basically 50% of when it appears at the end. So now we correlate together breakthrough time for each different sampling point and how much hysteresis occurs for that particular points at different ionic strength. So this axis is, so this is basically all the ports that we get water and hysteresis. Very complex here because too many hysteresis curve. And here is a bromide breakthrough at all the six different ports. What we did here is we have the breakthrough time for each port and we have the hysteresis index or how much exchange going on, which is an indicator of colloid. And we see a perfect correlation. So that proved that now we have this exchange which is driving these colloids and contaminant along with it. And which is also true for all different ionic strength. And what it sees here, what I like you to see here is the slope. Slope of its correlation is different, which means that at different ionic strength, this exchange is very different. And that's what driving the exchange between macropore and matrix. And so let's explain how this happened, just three different points. Here is a typical ion hysteresis curve. What I'd like you to point out is this 1, 2, and 3. Basically at point 1, which is a very high ionic strength, because at x-axis the ionic strength increasing order, this is a colloid released. At x-axis, this one point, we have very high ionic strength rainwater. And then the colloid which comes out is very low because it's very high ionic strength. It all adjusts. And the second point, we switch it to low ionic strength, where most colloids comes out because the ionic strength decreases. But now question is, what happened when it comes back to number 3? Because where we also have the similar ionic strength as 1 or increases, it doesn't come back to 0.1 because now all this macropore space is filled with this low ionic strength, high ionic strength. But this matrix is still not responding to the rainfall. It has still the low ionic strength wire from the previous rainfall. And that's what drives the colloids coming out of the matrix. And that's why we see a difference between number 1 and 3. And that's the reason why there is a sense. So that's the hypothesis what we prove, that the matrix which is supposed to keep all the contaminants has a way to release it by colloids. And that's important for arsenic, any kind of metals, or anything that stick to the matrix very strongly. And that's, and then if you ask question why, when the ionic strength change occurs, it occurs any rainfall. During the initial part of the rainfall, most salt are mobilized, that's why it is high ionic strength. If the rainfall progressively increases, then the ionic strength decreases. So for each rainfall, we have a change in ionic strength, and the mobilization occurs. So that's applicable for most of the contaminants in a weather zone transfer. So I'd like to acknowledge this grant is funded by Department of Energy, and my advisor Joe Ryan is in University of Colorado. Co-advisor Jim Sayer is in Yale University. And also I got a lot of help for getting the soil core from Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and we have to drive all the way back from there here. And folks from Oak Ridge National Laboratory for their help. And I'd like to thank you. And any question, by the way?
Thanks, Sanjay. Perfect timing and very interesting paper on the effect of ionic strength on molar movement. Do you have any questions, please? Thanks.
I guess maybe I missed it. What was this material? Was this a soil?
Yes, a soil.
Okay, so you would expect it to have some oxides and some clay minerals?
Yeah.
Okay, I think there, you might want to add some consideration of some chemical processes in there, like for cesium and strontium cation exchange. Bromide does adsorb at low pH, so it would depend on, you know, John's done a lot of work with that in flowing systems. Depending on your pH, that might be something you need to consider. The effect of increasing ionic strength on the flocculation dispersion, also on the monovalent versus divalent ion saturation, the cation exchange capacity of these materials, because you're just kind of having this overall description, which in a way, it may be good for the specific contaminant you're looking at, but I would be very careful to extrapolate that to contaminants in general, because they do have chemistry that might be that will be specific to the ion of interest.
Yes, that's definitely a very valid point, and we also recognize that's a more broad approach. And we in fact did the pH on ionic strength and the cation exchange, and we also that's a different paper about how these specific clays and oxides are preferentially mobilizing, not every colloids, and that's definitely one of the things that we did in our PhD too. And that's a very good question, and we are looking at it, and we saw some of those really.
One more question.
Yes.
I admit to being a little confused by the term diffusion.
Yeah.
It seems it could be diffusion if the water in what you were calling micropores were truly immobile water, but do you know that? In fact, it seems that it couldn't. It doesn't necessarily have to be a mobile water since it's responding to the rainfall. So is diffusion really the word you want to use?
That's true. We can't really say that it's diffusion or it could be just advection or dispersion. But for the bromide breakthrough, I saw in between where we have a pause. So the water inside the matrix, if it is not diffusing, then the bromide concentration should not change. At least it should stay where exactly it's supposed to be. But as I see, it could be, diffusion can be for bromide. Colloids, it may not be just diffusion because it's very heavy particles. It's not diffused because of Brownian motion. It's more because of driving of ionic strength.
Just another quick question. When you're having the colloids come from the finer texture material into the larger culture there. Is there enough, is the ionic strength enough of an inducement for dispersion without having some other kind of energy there as well to make them move out in there, or are they more likely very, very close to the force in which they're being transported?
I think it's right that it's not necessarily coming exactly inside the matrix. It's at the interface. That's the region where it's coming out. And there are other driving forces other than ionic strength, which could be the flow rate inside the port. If the very high flow rate, then it can really shear.
You've got to get more energy than just...
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right.
Expanding the double area.
Yeah, that's very right. There are a lot of different things because it's on saturated zone too. So the air-water interface also makes it mobilize. Yeah, that's definitely one of the factors.
Quick question. So you had a lot of colloid mobilized as high as 1.6 grams per liter. And your hysteresis assumption is that there's really mass loss, right? Hysteresis means the system is constant, there's no change in the system. That's why you can calculate hysteresis. But you're using a lot of colloid from the system, and now you're creating preferential flow path after the first run. And how do you calculate? Take that effect into consideration to calculate that hysteresis effect.
You probably should have a non-interactive tracer each time to look at how the tracer comes through after each event, because it would change.
Yeah, that's definitely one factor, that every time we have a rainfall, the colloids comes out. And now what we thought matrix at that one point is become a macrophore because all the colloids comes out. And but it's a progressive situation that it goes beyond and beyond. That's how it, some more fraction of the matrix being exposed. And we do this tracer. So it's a very broad way to say it, that it's a hysteresis. There are small fraction, like you said, that how do you, if I understand right, how do you know that it's a hysteresis, how you're going to count for that extra factors because of the mobilization? We don't. And that's a good way if we can do that. But I think for purpose of this experiment was to see if there is a reason that interface have an effect, and we did that one. But that's definitely one point.
Thank you very much. We can have 10 minutes break, and we'll be back at 10:00. Thank you, John. Thank you.